We are looking at the Bible doctrine of creation on the Let the Bible Speak program, and I'm glad that you've joined us this morning. Thank you for tuning in. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. That is a fundamental and foundational statement for our life. If we do not accept the biblical doctrine of creation, we're going to have a lot of problems in our life. We've got to go back to the beginning, back to the very first statement, in the beginning, God. If our life is based upon God, things will be fine. If our life is not based upon God, if it's based upon a belief that there is no God, there's going to be a lot of problems. Paul recognized that in Romans chapter 1 when he talked about individuals who refuse to have God in their knowledge. All of the sin and the sickness and the sorrow that comes as a result of atheism. The fool has said in his heart, there is no God. It causes a lot of problems, personally and with others. And so it's good to go back to the very beginning. And I'm hoping that by doing these lessons on the biblical doctrine of creation, that we will be encouraged to build our lives on God. In the beginning, God. In our first lesson, we looked at the fact that creation was an act of God. Number two, it was a free act. He freely chose because of his love and goodness and kindness to create. Number three, he brought forth something out of nothing. The universe is not eternal in nature. God is. And number four, creation was accomplished by God's word and will. Revelation 4:11, not by gradual long eons of time, by random chance evolution. And so let's continue this morning, and I want to look at two other points involving the biblical doctrine of creation. And that is that God created both the visible and the invisible. And we need to remember that because today, a lot of times we are thinking about the visible universe around us, and there's a lot of talk of environmentalism, saving our environment, which is good. I do believe we need to be good stewards of what God has made. But many people are caught up in the physical creation around us only, and they're not considering the invisible world that we are at war with. And then I want to look at the fact that creation was accomplished in six literal 24-hour days. So let's look at the fact that God created both the visible and the invisible. One of the scriptures that we read in a previous lesson came from Colossians chapter 1 and verse 16, speaking of Christ. For in him were all things created in the heavens and upon the earth, things visible and things invisible. Whether thrones or dominions or principalities or powers, all things have been created through him and unto him. Notice that, visible and invisible. That's very important. God created everything, not only what we see around us, but what we don't see. And we need to remember that everything on the earth and everything in the heaven. In the prayer of Nehemiah chapter 9 and verse 6. Thou art Jehovah, even thou alone. Thou hast made heaven, the heavens of the heavens, with all their host, the earth and all things that are thereon, the seas and all that is in them. And thou preservest them all, and the host of heaven worships thee. So sometimes host of heaven is used for the stars and the planets. Sometimes host of heaven is used for angels. God created everything invisible, even the unseen world of angels. Colossians 1:16, Revelation 5:11. And we need to remember that angels are created beings. They are not God, and so they're not to be worshipped. When John wanted to bow down to the angel in the book of Revelation, he was told twice, don't do that. Revelation 19:10 and Revelation 22:8 and 9. We worship God, we worship Jesus, but we don't worship angels. And another thing that is invisible, if you will, is time. God created time. The world had a beginning point. Genesis 1 and verse 1. In the beginning, the implication is time starting there, when all things began. And so we need to remember that God created all things visible and invisible. Now, we know that He also created everything on earth. God created living things after their kind, the Hebrew mean, meaning a general reproducing group of organisms. You find that after its kind mentioned several times in the book of Genesis in chapter 1. And these individual kinds, these groups of organisms, they were a kind and they did not evolve or transform themselves into another kind. Else, what would be the reason for producing different kinds to start with? You could just produce one kind and then it evolves into everything that has ever been. But that's not the case. You find with regard to Genesis 1:11, the seeds of the earth and the herbs after its kind. Let it bring forth fruit and let it bring forth seed. And the earth brought forth grass, herbs yielding seed after their kind. You find the same thing in verse 21, verses 24 and 25 with regard to the animal kingdom. So God created the physical world, and with regard to plants and animals, things after their kind. Now, within those kinds, there is variety, and God allowed for there to be change and adaptation. That's why we have different kinds of dogs. That's why you can have different kinds of roses and so forth. You can have a kind, but you don't ever see dogs evolving into cows. You have different kinds of cows, but you don't ever see cows evolving into something completely different. And so God created the physical world. In the school systems, often in the science books, you have this chart. I remember seeing it when I was a child, from amoeba to man. You have the amoeba, the primordial slime, and then out of that comes sort of some amphibious types of animals, and they crawl up on to the shore, and then they evolve, and this and that, and different animals change, and you eventually, you get reptiles, and you get dinosaurs, and then you get other kinds of animals, and you get all the way up to monkeys and orangutans and apes, and then they evolve into man. So amoeba to man was a very common chart years ago. That's not what we find in Genesis chapter 1. Man is a completely separate creation on the sixth day from the plant kingdom and the animal kingdom. God created man special, Genesis 1, 26 and 27. Chapter 2 and verse 7, formed from the dust of the ground, breathed into his nostrils the breath of life, made in the image of God. And so mankind is a special creation, and he's at the beginning. Marriage and mankind, Matthew 19:4, are at the beginning, not thousands, hundreds of thousands of years after the Big Bang, millions of years, and then hundreds of thousands of years in the evolutionary type of process. Mankind is at the very beginning of creation time, not at the end. In fact, the evolutionists talk about how that man is a relatively newcomer in the evolution of time. No, man and marriage are at the beginning, and they're created in the image of God. Man has a spirit within him, and that makes him different from the plant kingdom and the animal kingdom. A soul and a spirit that is formed, and mankind is fully formed, not evolving into man. Genesis 2, 22 through 25. Both man and woman that was formed from the rib of Adam. And so God is making both the invisible and the visible. And mankind is special. I want us to remember the fact that God created angels, and Peter tells us that In time, we're not told how long that was, but in time, angels sinned, Peter says in 2 Peter chapter 2. Angels sinned. Verse 4, if God spared not the angels when they sinned, but cast them down to hell and committed them to the pits of darkness to be reserved unto judgment. Among those angels is the devil. And a lot of people are concerned about the earth and the ozone layer and global warming and our environment and those physical things, kinds of things. And I think that's very good, as I said earlier. But we also need to be concerned about the invisible world. God also created that. And some of those angels chose to sin, implying that they had law. Sin is a violation of God's law. God had law for them, and they kept not their proper habitation, Peter says. And so they didn't stay within their bounds. And it also implies that they had free will. And some of them, including the devil, chose to exercise that free will to violate God's law. And from that time forward, they become those individuals. We'll read that demons are a part of that in the New Testament period. The devil and his angels will be those who are constantly at battle with the righteous. And of course, we know the devil appears in Genesis chapter 3 and tempts Eve first, and then Adam takes the fruit from Eve, and he gets them to sin through temptation. We need to remember that whole world. That's a part of God's creation as well. And Ephesians chapter 6 and verse 10, finally, be strong in the Lord and in the strength of his might. Put on the whole armor of God that you may be able to stand against the wiles of the devil. For our wrestling is not against flesh and blood, physical fighting, but against principalities, against the powers, against the world rulers of this darkness, against the spiritual host of wickedness in the heavenly places. Wherefore, take up the whole armor of God, that you may be able to withstand in the evil day, and having done all, to stand. And then he talks about putting on the whole armor of God, that we might be able to stand against the wiles of the devil, verse 11, and that we might be able to stand against the world rulers of this darkness, the men and women whom the devil has influenced for wickedness, and the devil and his angels, principalities and powers. This is something that we have to fight against. We don't see the devil with the naked eye. We don't see his angels. We don't see these principalities and powers. Now, we do see the world rulers of this darkness that are influenced by them. Somebody says, well, I don't believe in the devil. Well, have you taken a look at your world around you? Where did all that come from? It didn't come from God. When God created everything in Genesis chapter 1 and verse 2, chapter 1 and chapter 2, we're told that everything was good and that it was very good. Well, where did all this bad come from? Well, it starts with the devil in Genesis 3. It started even before that with he and other angels sinning against God, and they are cast out and they are put in pits of darkness, Tartarus, and a place for judgment. The devil is allowed to roam the earth as a roaring lion, 1 Peter 5. And demons were a part of his work in the gospel age, the four gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, and then even some after that. The demons. These are the devil and his angels and demons are individuals, spirit beings that turned against God. They were a part of all that good creation, everything in the beginning, including all those angels. All of it was good. Some of them exercised their free will to do what is bad. And we war against that, friends, and we've got to put on the whole armor of God. And if you're not a Christian, a faithful Christian, and putting on that whole armor, God gives us the spiritual armor to fight against that. Then we find ourselves and our spouse and our friends and family and everybody around us just go down that dark path of sin and sickness and sorrow, and it's terrible. And Paul talks about the spiritual host of wickedness and world rulers of this darkness. It's a dark place. And so we see the alcohol and the drugs and the sexual abuse and the racism and the hate and the anger and the killing and the law breaking and the abuse and the sexualization of children, on and on and on. Where's that coming from? It's coming from a wicked and a dark place, because people are not arming themselves against this part of creation that has gone rogue, if you will, gone bad, gone wicked. And we've got to remember that that is in the world. People are just thinking about, well, climate change and the ozone layer and the forest and the Amazon forest and things like that. We need to think about that, but we need to think more importantly with regard to our soul's salvation. We need to be thinking about this spiritual battle that we are in. And many people are losing that battle. Friend, I would encourage you to become a Christian and put on that whole armor of God so that you don't lose that battle. That's one battle that you do not want to lose. Now, the next thing that I want to talk about is the fact that creation was accomplished in six literal 24-hour days. Not long eons of time, billions and billions of years, but six literal 24-hour days. When you turn back to Genesis chapter 1, and if you're in a place where you can open your Bible, and you turn back to Genesis chapter 1, you find at the end of each day, each section, you find this statement, and there was evening and there was morning one day, and there was evening and there was morning a second day, and there was evening and there was morning a third day, a fourth day, a fifth day, a sixth day. What do we find? What is that? Well, some people say that's long periods of time. No, the Hebrew word for day, yom, or days, yamim, like other words, can have a variety of meanings. What does it mean here in this context? What does it mean here? Now, even in this context, the word day can mean time in general. For example, in chapter 2 and verse 4, these are the generations of the heavens and the earth when they were created, in the day that Jehovah God made earth and heaven, in the day, in the time in which he did that. So it can be used there. The immediate context would determine that. But how did Moses use the word day in Genesis 1, 5, 8, 13, 19, 23, and 31? How is that? Is that the same as 2, 4? No, because there's something else that has been added in. And when you look at each of those 6 days, you find, first of all, that there is a day and night cycle that is presented. You find this evening and morning one day, evening and morning a second day, a third day, a fourth day, a fifth day, a sixth day. First of all, there is the turning of the earth rotating on its axis. So the sun is been created, chapter 1, verses 14 through 19. And the earth is rotating on its axis. God made a light source from the very beginning. Let there be light. And then later he made the sun and other lights. But notice from the very first day with the general light source, which either became the sun or the sun was separate from that light source, notice that there was an evening and a morning. There is a rotation of the earth on its axis, meaning this is where we get our 24-hour day. So notice, first of all, the day or the night-day cycle that is present, a rotation of the earth on its axis. Number two, ordinal numbers are used for these days. One day, second day, third day, fourth day, fifth day, sixth day, ordinal numbers. In other words, day with a number with it. Whenever that is used in Scripture, we're talking about 24-hour days. A great example of this is in Numbers chapter 7, where the same language is used, of the princes who bring the different gifts. And it says that they brought these gifts for the, at the end of the setting up of the tabernacle, they're going to bring these gifts for the dedication of the tabernacle. And we find this same thing in Numbers 7:12, the first day. Verse 18, the second day. Verse 24, the third day, the fourth day, the fifth day, the sixth day, the seventh day, the eighth day, the ninth day, the tenth day, the 11th day. Nobody says that this is long eons of time. Everybody would say this is just literal 24-hour days. Friends, this is the same language that is being used in Genesis chapter 1. The only reason why people come in here and try to twist and distort the word day is because they've already bought into the scientific theories that aren't true, and then they try to get the Bible to fit the scientific theories instead of the other way around. Instead of believing the Bible to be true, and we've got to, and by the way, God made science. Science is not man-made. God made the things that are studied by science. God made the mind that studies the physical things. God made the principles where you use observation and where you use study and where you use reason. God made all of that. God made science. The problem with science is not science itself. The problem with science is pseudoscience or man false science. So science and the Bible are compatible. Absolutely. True science. God made both of them. And when you have both Genesis 1 properly interpreted and science properly interpreted, they fit together like hand and glove. But it's man-made pseudoscience that is believed above all else, and then we try to either get rid of the Bible altogether or try to cram it into science, and we end up distorting the days of creation. So number one, there is an evening and morning cycle, a rotation of the earth, which is a normal day situation. Secondly, the numbers that are used. Number three, days are distinguished from years. In chapter 1 and verse 14, we already have a distinction from the very beginning. Let them be for signs and for seasons and for days and for years. Moses did not use the word day to mean 24 hours and 365 days and eons of time. He's using two different words. He's already making a distinction. And then later, there will be the word month that is used elsewhere in the Old Testament. So Moses and the other writers had ways of distinguishing time. So days are distinguished from years. And number four, Adam was created on the sixth day. On the sixth day. But he lived to be a total of 930 years. Clearly, there's a distinction between the day in which he was born, the 24-hour day, and then the years that he lived in the total amount of his life. And then we have, in addition to that, direct statements from other passages. Somebody says, well, this whole thing in Genesis 1 is sort of figurative and symbolic and generic. Well, let's look at a context which is clearly just simply historical narrative. There's nothing symbolic about it. In the giving of the Ten Commandments with regard to setting aside the Sabbath day and not working and keeping it holy and resting on the Sabbath day. This is just a narrative, historical narrative. There's nothing symbolic about this. And in Exodus chapter 20 and verse 11, for in 6 days Jehovah made heaven and earth and sea and all that is in them and rested on the seventh day. But look at what he had said earlier in verse 9. 6 days thou shalt work and do all thy work. That's based upon the 6 days of God. But on the seventh day is a Sabbath unto Jehovah, thou shalt not do any work. For in 6 days Jehovah made heaven and earth and rested on the seventh. One is patterned after the other. And there isn't a Jew alive who thought that meant 6 eons of time and then rest for an eon of time, or 6 periods of billions of years and then rest for billions of years. No person did that. Why? Because They understood 6 days and 7 days, and Moses based that on what God did. The same thing in Exodus 31, verse 17. So creation was accomplished in 6 literal 24-hour days, not long eons of time, not billions of years, suggested by many modern scientists and even some brethren, unfortunately, in members of Churches of Christ and in denominational teachings. They try to link God theism with evolution, and they have this hybrid of theistic evolution. All it is a compromise, and what ends up being changed is not evolution, but theistic evolutionists come in and they change the Bible and distort it to fit evolution. And that's what's really sad. They say that both are held in high esteem, the Bible and evolution. But in fact, when you examine it, evolution outweighs the Bible every time in that particular approach. There are a lot of theories that attempt to harmonize the creation account in Genesis 1 with the findings of modern science. In other words, supposed long eons of time. Some have said that chapter 1 and 2 is just simply allegorical and mythical. It's not literal and historical and narrative. Well, when you read these accounts, there's nothing symbolic going on. It is just narrative. It is factual, what God did. And it's the same thing in chapter 3. You read about the devil and Adam and Eve and the different things that are going on there. You just get the natural conclusion that it's just a narrative. It's the same thing in chapter 1 and chapter 2. And by the way, if chapter 1 and 2 is allegorical and mythical, at what point in the book of Genesis do we get into the historical? Some people believe that, you know, these individuals were actually historical and real, and these things actually happened. Where's the break between the allegorical and the historical? Some people won't tell you, or they just arbitrarily make it somewhere. Not only that, but where's the change between day being eons of time and then the word day being used later in the book of Genesis? And sometimes people will say, well, that's a 24-hour day. In the story of Noah and the ark, for example, the number of days that it rained on the earth. I had somebody tell me, well, that was literal 24-hour days, but back in chapter 1, it was long eons of time. And I just asked him, well, where's the break between long eons of time and 24-hour days? And he didn't want to tell me. And what's the justification for those two different things? He didn't want to tell me. The fact is, chapter 1 and 2 is historical narrative. Some say, well, it's a literary framework. Some say there's a gap theory. There's long periods of time between the two. These are just simply theories of man, the day-age theory, theistic evolution. Friends, we just simply need to believe the truth of God's Word. In the beginning, God. You have to have God in your life and obey Him through Jesus Christ and be a faithful Christian. Let me help you to do that, friend. Come be with us. Come study with us. Come get God in your life. Thank you for being with us today, and have a good day.